that Julia might be interested, that she might be appreciative. She checked her phone. No text. She heard the front door close and looked up. Another first. Richard had left for work without a goodbye. Chapter 3 Ginger was setting the table when Solly called from the kitchen.
Somebody's bugs are here.
The ants came?
Charlie ran to see them. He and Callie had been double-team begging for a pet for a year. Charlie did the asking while Callie pretended to be the pet. For their first attempt, a dog, Callie panted as she pawed her mother, staring up with adoring eyes.
How sweet, Glory said.
Want to lift to the animal shelter? I'm sure they'll be able to find a dog as cute as you, a darling family, in no time.
They tried a cat next, after Mimi told them cats were hardly any work. This time, while Charlie asked, Callie purred and rubbed against her mother's leg. Her mother shooed them both away.
Nice try, but I'm allergic.
Give it up,
Glory told them the day Callie trotted over to her and neighed.
Bad enough I have to take care of stuffed animals. Every day I put them on the shelf. Every night they're back on the floor. We are not getting a pet.
But the edict had changed abruptly the night the family, gathered in the den, saw the commercial for Uncle Milton's Ant Farm on TV. Solly, who had a low tolerance for other people's pitches, waved the idea away with a laugh.
What kind of crazy idiot thinks people are going to pay money to bring bugs into the house?
If Uncle Milton is such a crazy idiot, Gloria needled, how come he's a millionaire? That's what he's making from bugs, Solly. Millions.
Charlie pounced.
Can we get one? Can me and Callie get an ant farm?
Before Solly's grunt of displeasure was fully disgorged, Glory had answered for both of them.
What a darling idea. You most certainly may.
It took 8 weeks for the farm to arrive, and when it came, Charlie was disappointed to discover that ants were not included. Instead, there was a coupon, and after he sent that in, another long wait. Now, of all nights, on Ginger's 13th birthday, the contentious ants had arrived.
Take them to your room, Ginger whispered to her brother, before the ant farm fight starts up again.
But it was too late. Glory had heard the commotion and breezed in to join them.
Is that a tube of darling ants I see?
Solly rolled his eyes and moved to the den.
We're bringing them upstairs, Ginger announced. Go, she told her brother.
He raced to the stairs with the ants, Callie and Mimi right behind him. But when Ginger tried to follow, Glory blocked her.
Be a peach and put out glasses.
She tapped her chin with her finger, nail glistening with fresh polish.
Who shall I seat where?
Ginger cautiously relaxed now that she saw outside Glory had appeared. That's how Ginger thought of her mother whenever company was coming. When it was just them, the family home alone, inside Glory ruled the day. The actual transformation of inside to outside was not pleasant to observe. It took about an hour with a makeup kit jammed with so many tools it no longer closed. For Ginger, the improvement in her mother had nothing to do with the change from ordinary looking to movie star beauty. She didn't care one way or another whether her mother's wavy hair had framed her heart-shaped face, or that her lashes looked longer, or her eyes seemed a more striking shade of blue. But outside Glory was so much easier to be around. With plain-faced inside Glory, there was no telling what might set her off. The doorbell rang. The Chinese food was here. Solly paid. Glory took the bag and proceeded to scoop the food out of the containers and into her best china bowls. They were up to dessert. Scooter pies with a birthday candle in each one, an idea Glory got from the newspaper and improved upon, she pointed out, by plating with doilies. When Mimi asked,
What happened to Ivan the director, man?
Solly looked up from where he sat, stuck between Paul Clark and young Thomas. In Glory's final seating plan, his usual seat at the head of the table was assigned to the birthday girl. Ginger hadn't been sure if she was supposed to accept his seat, but Solly nodded in a way that let her know she should. He nodded the same way a moment later, when her mother presented her with a crown clearly meant for a young child. When she put it on, the silver headband dug into the skin behind her ears, and the tinsel-fringed happy birthday sign shed glitter on her plate.
"Ivan's coming," Glory said. "His meeting in New York must have gone long."
As Ginger scraped the glitter off her scooter pie, she watched her mother lean closer to Mr. Diggins, who had resumed telling a story in a voice too soft for anyone else to hear. Ginger took a bite of dessert and turned to her father, who was getting a lecture from Paul Clark about the proper way to maintain shag carpets. Her father's eyelids fluttered. He was falling asleep right at the table.
"Dad?"
she called over. But it was too late. Glory had noticed. She stood up and clapped.
"Okay, adult time. How about you kids go upstairs? Show Thomas the ant farm so he can see what a million-dollar idea looks like."
They didn't have to be asked twice. They sat on the floor in a circle around the ant farm as if it were a campfire.
"Did you get any queens?" Thomas asked. "You can't buy queens," Charlie explained, and then made up the rest. "If you do, you get arrested. I wouldn't want them anyway. When you have queens, there's always war."
Mimi stood up. "Call me if it goes nuclear."
Ginger followed her into the hall.
"Stop," she hissed. "You're going to get us in trouble."
Ignoring her, Mimi sat on the floor and pressed her forehead against the banister to listen to whatever story Gloria was concocting now. But their mother had the ears of a predator.
"Girls?"
Ginger covered Mimi's mouth. Mimi pushed her hand away. Glory went back to talking to her guests.
"We actually met Milton Bradley once. Where was that, Solly? Was it the toy convention in Atlantic City?"
Ginger and Mimi shook their heads. Their mother never went on business trips.
Solly changed the subject. "I think maybe Ivan the director isn't coming after all." "Who is this Ivan?"
Mr. Diggins asked.
"He runs our theater group. Man's a genius, a lifesaver. Saved my life, at least."
Glory proceeded to tell Mr. Diggins the story of her career derailment. Upstairs, perched beside the banister, Ginger and Mimi nodded at what was true and shook their heads at what was not.
"Always wanted to be an actress," they nodded. "First day in New York, got a job on Broadway."
They shook their heads.
"My bad luck, show closed that week."
They shrugged. A show may have closed, but she wasn't in it.
"Got a job as a personal shopper to support myself."
Double nods.
"Sang in nightclubs on my days off."
Ginger wasn't sure, but Mimi was. That part was made up.
"Quite a story."
Mr. Diggins sounded impressed.
"How did the actress and the toy man come to meet?"
"Dancing,"
Glory said, and the girls nodded.
"Solly was a cheek-to-cheek dream of a dancer once upon a time. We considered a career together."
The girls shook their heads.
"But Solly decided he wanted a future in toys. Must have had a premonition about his feet."
"No one's interested," Solly said. "No one wants to hear."
"Sure they do. The real kicker," Glory confided, "is I didn't go back to acting because we wanted to start a family, and then nothing happened."
"Who knew it would take so long to prime the pump? Once I got going, different story. Shot 'em out 1, 2, 3, and 4.
There was laughter and movement, and then Paul Clark's voice.
"Early day tomorrow, for those who work."
Mr. Diggins chuckled.
"Touché."
The front door shut.
"What's big in toys these days, Saul?"
Sully is quite the entrepreneur, Glory said. He has a real eye for fads.
It's not me. It's my four product testers upstairs. They're the ones.
Not the older girls so much anymore, Glory corrected him. You know how that goes. One day they're into toys, next day they're into boys.
Ew, Mimi protested before Ginger could stop her.
Girls, Glory called. How about you put a hold on the eavesdropping and join the party? Bring everyone with you.
It was not a request. When Ginger got to Charlie's room, he was holding an eyedropper over the ant farm, telling another tall tale.
They can only get one drop a day. More than that, they'll drown.
Thomas stared mesmerized.
How can that many ants share only one measly drop of water?
Kidlings! Glory called out.
Startled, Charlie's fingers closed hard on the plastic bulb. They watched as the eyedropper spurted all its water into the tank at once.
It's okay, Charlie told a stunned Callie. I ordered special ants, extra thirsty ants, guaranteed not to drown. Right, Gingy?
Ginger nodded and led them downstairs. When they got to the living room, they saw their father grinning at the door and the guests heading out.
Too late. Party's over.
Glory breezed past Sully and followed the Clarks outside. Sully's grin vanished.
What, you moving in with them now?
Glory laughed gently. There was company, after all.
Did you forget? The All My Sons audition tomorrow? We're going to get Casper a script.
She blew kisses into the room.
For your pockets, she sang out. Special kisses, last forever.
The door clicked shut behind her. Sully shuffled to the den and sank into his chair like a bad mood. Ginger herded everyone upstairs to get into pajamas. They reconvened in Charlie's room to make sure none of the ants had drowned while they were gone. So far, so good, but they decided they'd better keep watch for a while, just to be sure. A slam announced Glory's return. It was Callie, rushing downstairs to share the news that the ants had survived, who knocked over the farm, sand and ants spilling out in a rush.
You go down, Charlie told Ginger. I'll clean up.
Ginger stared at the mess sinking into the forest of avocado and gold shag carpet.
I'll find them, Charlie insisted. I'll find every ant, I swear.
When Ginger and Mimi got to the den, Glory closed the journal on her lap and let out a weary sigh. Being interrupted was one of the better-known burdens of her life.
Yes,
Ginger sat beside her.
Did you get Mr. Diggins' script?
Her mother looked surprised at her interest.
Matter of fact, I did not. Building was locked.
She sighed again. What I did get was news that Evelyn's going out for my part.
Imagine. I mean, yes, I can use a break from memorizing lines. It's exhausting to get the lead every time, but we're talking about Arthur Miller. The man deserves a certain standard. Evelyn is my best friend, but projecting? Too polite. Not to mention, Anne Deaver is supposed to be a knockout. I'm not saying I'm a knockout, but at least I don't have that little piggy nose.
She lifted the tip of her nose to demonstrate.
Right up the nostrils, you can't help but look.
She doesn't even realize. Ginger and Mimi nodded vigorously at the pity of it. A woman with no idea she had a piggy nose. Maybe they nodded too vigorously.
Where's Callie? Glory looked around. Where's your brother?
Mimi turned them in without hesitation.
Cleaning up the mess.
After the vacuum cleaner went off, they heard Glory's bedroom door slam shut. Ginger and Mimi found Charlie and Callie sitting sullen on the floor.
She vacuumed up everything, Charlie told them. Even the ants.
Callie lay down on her back and made like a dead ant, hands and legs in the air, tongue hanging out the side of her mouth,
eyes staring wide. She sat back up.
All gone.
Her watery eyes were rimmed with red.
The ants will be fine, Charlie assured her. They're just taking a nap.
In the vacuum cleaner?
She asked.
You can get more,
Ginger consoled them.
There's millions outside,
Mimi said. She looked a little guilty, which Ginger thought was appropriate considering she was the one who spilled the beans about the knocked-over ant farm.
I'll help you dig, Mimi went on, to China if you want.
She raced downstairs and might have gone out right then in the dark, but the phone rang. They all froze. A ringing phone always brought their mother. When she didn't appear, Ginger ran into the kitchen and answered it. It was Evelyn, and she sounded upset.
Can you put your mother on the phone, honey?
They crowded together to watch as Glory put the receiver to her ear. Her face went pale.
A widowmaker? He's gone? They called you?
She hung up, pressed her fingers to her temples, and silently climbed the stairs. Solly went up after her, but came back a minute later, clutching the slim green Dramatists Guild edition of All My Sons in his stubby hand.
Your mother's not well.
As Ginger followed him into the kitchen, he answered the question she hadn't known to ask.
Ivan, the director, heart attack. Crashed into a tree on his way over here. Dead.
He placed the toe of his oversized shoe on the step pedal of the trash can. The script landed with a thud. He moved to the den and turned up the volume on the TV. One day in, and already Mimi's prediction was true. 13 was an unlucky year. And not just for her. Ginger could feel it. Bad luck coming for them all. Chapter 4. For years, Ginger had started each term of Nurse Tangle's danger class by opening the floor to parents and asking them to tell her their worries. It was from this survey of disquiet that she would create the semester's curriculum. She came up with this approach after finally noticing how often parents walked into her class with something very specific in mind. All it took was one news cycle about Ebola to make what to do when lightning strikes seem like a tone-deaf topic. In the end, the topic didn't really matter. There were plenty of dangers to go around. As long as parents left her class with more information than they had when they arrived, Ginger was happy. But tonight, she felt distracted, unsure that she'd be able to focus. Julia's extended sleepover had gotten to her. With her whiteboard and collapsible easel under her arm, Ginger made a quick detour to the high school nurse's office. Her friend Lydia didn't teach at the adult school, but she had told Ginger she'd be in the building to proctor a CPR test for the babysitting club. Though they were both school nurses, Lydia and Ginger had completely different areas of expertise. As an elementary school nurse, Ginger was proficient in nosebleeds and lice. High school nurse Lydia was the expert on eating disorders and bad boyfriends. Ginger told Lydia her concerns. Julia was deceiving her. She wasn't where she said she was. Her friend, Angie, was colluding in the lie. The friend's mother was clueless. Lydia shook her head.
I don't buy it. If the sleepover was bogus, there'd be clues. It's the saving grace of teenagers, how horrible they are at hiding their tracks.
My opinion?
She's exactly where she says she is. Let it be, and it will pass.
As Ginger walked up the dim stairwell to the classroom, she tried to believe what Lydia said was true. But it didn't feel true.
Lydia might know teenagers, but Ginger knew guile.
She found her room. This term, they'd assigned her 302, and opened the door. The funky odor hit her at once. She glanced at the board, algebra equations, and diagnosed math anxiety. Putting aside her Julia worries, she got busy, trying to open the windows that all turned out to be stuck,
fanning the front and rear doors to move around the stuffy air, and locating the wastebasket so at least she'd know where it was if the smell made someone sick. By the time she set up her easel, her worries about Julia had crept back, like water finding its own level, to their pride of place. She put the whiteboard in position, and as parents tentatively entered, tried to ignore the growing urge to take out her phone and text Julia again. She was writing down parent fears on the whiteboard, dangers of recess, heroin in the high school, when her phone vibrated. She took a quick look. It was her mother, and went back to making the list. The phone buzzed a second time just after the bell rang. She smiled as parents filed out past the whiteboard of warnings, candles and fire, common household poisons, and took the call. Glory.
Everything okay, Mom?
That's the first thing out of your mouth? Everything okay is your hello?
Deep breath.
It's Tuesday night. I teach Tuesday nights, remember?
So much for the color-coded calendar she'd made to help her mother keep track of when she wasn't available.
Then why'd you pick up? Did you know there's something you can jiggle on your phone so it doesn't ring? Julia showed me. Ask her. I'm sure she'll show you if you ask.
I picked up because my class just ended. Is everything okay?
Again with the worrying. I'm fine. You're fine. Everybody's fine. I ran out of Metamucil is all, and I know you go by the drugstore on your way home. I'm trying to save you an extra trip. I was planning to leave you a message. You don't always have to answer.
I know, Ginger said. Okay, I'll get you Metamucil.
In the drugstore, she replayed Lydia's words in her head. Let it be, and it will pass. It wasn't bad advice. But the tricky thing about advice was how quickly it lost its power when the person who gave it wasn't present. She thought about this as she dialed Julia's cell. Was it true for her students? After she made them promise to always, always, always wear their helmets when they rode their bikes, after they nodded and repeated it back, did they walk out of her office and immediately forget what she'd said? Julia's voicemail kicked in, and despite the voice in her head urging her to hang up, at the sound of the beep, Ginger spoke.
Just calling to say hello.
That sounded ridiculous.
Just checking to see if you're coming home tonight.
That sounded desperate.
I miss you, Jules.
That probably wasn't good to say either. She terminated the call and reminded herself, if Julia was lying, there'd be clues. But as she got in her car, she couldn't help but think, what if there were clues and I missed them? Glory swung open the door.
What are you doing here?
Oh, Ginger hadn't meant to come back now. She'd driven over on autopilot. Her mother could do this to her. Turn her from a nurse with a no-nonsense attitude into a person with neither will nor resolve. Glory cocked her head.
I could have sworn on a Bible you told me 100 times you don't like to visit at night. Too tired, you always say.
Her mother looked different. Small things, but Ginger noticed. Her wispy white hair had escaped from its usually well-secured bun. Her porcelain skin had been over-powdered to a ghostly white. And though her eyes were still their usual fierce blue, her gaze was off, giving her the look of a slightly befuddled retired dean.
Something's on your mind.
Her mother yanked the belt of her robe, pulling it tighter.
I can smell.
You can tell, Ginger corrected her. Are you sure you're okay?
She handed over the drugstore bag.
They had 2 flavors. I didn't know which you liked, so I got both.
Glory peered into the bag.
I asked for this.
She set it on the hall table.
If you say so.
It was tricky business, trying to figure out if Glory was attempting to be funny.
Long as you're here, might as well come in. Want something to drink? Don't be a grump.
Ginger followed her mother into the kitchen and sat down at the table, which was covered with pieces of the unsorted puzzle Ginger had given her last week. What happened to the felt mat? She'd bought the mat so that her mother could roll up her unfinished puzzles when she wanted to use the table for something else, like eating.
Beats me. Maybe it's with the tea kettle.
Ginger looked at the stove. What happened to the kettle?
Glory shrugged. Probably with the mat. That puzzle?
She nodded toward the table.
Too easy.
This was her latest complaint, that the puzzles Ginger brought were too easy. The ones Mimi brought, hand-cut from rare wood, works of art, really, were expensive and impossible to do, but Glory didn't seem to mind. The puzzle might be easy, but she'd made no progress since the last time Ginger was over. Want some help? Glory shook her head and studied Ginger's face.
What's wrong? Nothing. You're fine.
Surprising them both, Ginger decided to share. There's been some drama at home with Julia. Boy drama.
Oh.
Glory sat down and moved around a few puzzle pieces.
I remember that. Boy drama.
She shook her head.
Drama, drama, drama.
This was surprising to hear. Ginger could not remember a single incident of boy drama growing up. She had made sure not to have any drama of any kind. And if Mimi had boy drama, she'd kept it to herself. Could Glory be referring to Callie? Was that what their big blow-up was about? A boy? Ginger knew so few details. She'd left for college not long after Callie went away to boarding school, and Mimi had left 2 years after that. By the time Callie came home, her sisters were long gone. Ginger and Mimi knew at some point there'd been a big argument, but what it was about was a mystery.
Can I ask you something?
Her mother didn't flinch.
You know you can ask me absolutely anything.
That was laughable, but Ginger let it go.
Julia has this boyfriend, and she knows I don't like him. We've been fighting a lot. Which made me think about you and Callie and the big fight you had. I know you don't like to talk about it. But what with Julia and all, I was wondering if you could tell me. Was the fight about a boy? Is that how you and Callie became estranged?
Her mother's fingers stopped their sorting and her eyes grew cloudy and dull.
What do you mean, estranged?
Before Ginger could figure out how to respond, Glory stood up.
Where's my brush?
She rustled through several kitchen drawers and then disappeared down the hall. When she returned, her hair was hanging loose. She scooted her chair around and sat so her back was facing Ginger.
I like to brush 100 times before I go to bed, but lately, I don't know why, I get to 50 and my hand aches like nobody's business.
She gave Ginger a small silver comb.
Don't talk, or you'll lose count.
Her mother's hair felt fragile as a web. Ginger counted to 100 and stopped.
Done.
You're a very good brusher, Gingy.
Now,
give me a kiss and go home.
Ginger leaned over and brushed her lips against her mother's soft cheek.
Don't be a worrywart. Julia's a beautiful girl and such an actress. Almost as good as me.
Julia's not an actress.
Oh, come on. Think positive for once.
In the car, Ginger experimented with thinking positive.
Julia will be there when I get home, she said out loud, smiling so her voice would sound like she meant it.
But as she walked up the front path to her house, the positive thinking came to a halt. There was Richard. She could see him through the dining room window, framed as if in a photograph, alone at the table, computer open, legal pad beside it, pen down, mouth set in a frown, fingertips at his forehead, shoulders hunched in distress. She locked the door behind her and went straight to him.
What happened? What's wrong? Is Julia okay?
She felt as if the room was starting to spin.
Nothing's wrong.
The pitch of Richard's voice, usually baseline conciliatory, now sounded defeated.
Nothing's wrong yet.
What does that mean? He closed his eyes and sat so still that for a brief moment Ginger wondered if it was possible he'd actually fallen asleep. His eyes snapped open.
I don't know. Forget it.
Forget what? You don't know what? He shook his head, got up, started out of the room.
Forget it. Really. It's been a long day.
Something's wrong. I can hear it in your voice. Richard, what's going on?
Work problem. Neglect. Brutal. I'm tired, that's all. I'm going to bed.
She watched him slowly walk up the stairs in silence and tried to ignore the nagging sense that what he'd said was only partly true. Chapter 5. The Widowmaker news about Ivan seemed to ricochet out of the phone and land like a missile on Glory's forehead.
Headache's a doozy,
Solly told Ginger as he carefully plucked ice cubes out of a tray and laid them at the bottom of a stainless steel bowl, careful to preserve the silence. He added water and a towel and crept upstairs to administer the cold compress. Downstairs, Ginger went into full doozy mode, disconnecting the phone, taping a do-not-ring note on the doorbell, and setting out Charlie, Callie, and Mimi on the front step, as if they were milk bottles waiting to be picked up. In the morning, while Glory slept in, breakfast was a silent free-for-all. Under Solly's distracted supervision, Mimi deconstructed packets of Hostess snowballs. Charlie flew peanut butter space food sticks through the imaginary mouth hole of his imaginary space helmet. Ginger picked at the burnt edges of the cinnamon sugar Pop-Tart she'd left in the toaster too long, and Callie made a messy party out of a can of Snack Mate and a bag of Bugles. The daily news obscured Solly's face, though whether he was holding the paper up to more easily read it or to block out the sight of their carrying on, Ginger wasn't sure. The main thing was, he was managing. Managing to get them fed, to wrangle them into the car, to drop the right kid at the right school, and to get to work. All without disturbing their mother. As for what would happen after school, who should walk home and who would get picked up, Ginger had no idea. But when she exited the white brick building of her junior high at dismissal time, she saw, across the street, the familiar arm hanging out the window of their Chevelle Caprice, Pepto-Bismol-colored fingernails tapping out impatience on the sky-blue door.
"Doesn't Mom look better than ever?"
Mimi asked as Ginger slid into the death seat. Glory's eyes flicked to the rearview mirror.
"Are you saying I looked bad before?"
A contest broke out over who could come up with the best superlative to describe how great she looked before and now. But she ended it fast.
"You trying to get my headache to come back?"
They weren't, and no more was said. Not about the headache, not about the canceled play, and not about the deceased director. Headache-free Glory, Ginger saw, had been busy. The velvet club chairs in the living room had been switched with the sofa. Drag marks on the den carpet showed the route the TV console had taken to its new spot. Tangled vines of extension cords now straining to stay plugged in. The kitchen held the smell of meat, but all signs of food preparation had been erased. The porcelain sink gleamed, the floor was slick with wood preen, empty jars lined the counter, Mr. Clean standing guard beside the Drano, the Glade alert beside the Bon Ami. At the back of her throat, Ginger felt the burn of bleach. She opened the medicine cabinet and stared at the empty shelves.
"Where's the Ludens?"
"Expired," Glory called out. "Like everything else in this mausoleum. Come see my new puzzle."
Ginger joined her in the dining room. Big Ben was now boxed up, on top of the other finished puzzles piled against the wall in a tower of accomplishment. A new puzzle sat in its place.
"What do you think?" her mother asked, It's Lake Lugano. Only one at Woolworth's I haven't done.
Looks hard, Ginger said.
A monkey could do it.
I'm looking for gray corners if anyone cares.
We all care, Ginger swore, but we have homework. Do I look like I'm stopping you?
At dinner time, Glory dealt out the harvest gold melamine plates she used whenever Solly wasn't joining them.
Stuck at work. An emergency. Maybe the toy soldiers got drafted.
She slid a rectangle of meat onto a plate and passed it to Ginger.
Put this on the front step.
The rectangle was miracle meatloaf. The miracle was Solly didn't mistake it for a brick when he came home just after 8. He gave a try at pretending the cold slab was tasty, even making noises meant to sound like pleasure. But Glory wasn't fooled. Her mood darkened. The purging and rearranging continued. The next day, when Ginger came home from school, she saw Solly's new shipment of one-armed Rock'em Sock'em robots bagged at the curb for the garbage men. When she went over to the Clarks to work, it was a mother's helper day, she told Evelyn what was going on.
She also switched the beds in my room. Now my sister's bunk is blocking the window. I asked her why, but she won't tell me.
It's because she's upset, Evelyn explained.
The two of them were in the kitchen, sitting side by side on stools, peeling carrots. Ginger's mother's helper duties having recently been upgraded from watching Thomas, who just turned 10 and pretty much entertained himself, to helping make dinner. But even watching Thomas watch TV was an upgrade from staying home. That Glory had agreed to allow Ginger to accept the job in the first place was because of a combination of good luck and good timing. A group of women from the theater group were over, running lines, the day that Evelyn said,
"You wouldn't by any chance be willing to let me borrow Ginger for a few afternoons a week, would you? It would be such a help."
"That's sweet," Glory had said.
And then, after making a big production about needing time to think it over, she broke into laughter.
"Be my guest," she smiled and winked. "Keep her as many days as you like."
After the carrots were peeled, Evelyn handed Ginger the knife.
"Ever cut vegetables?"
"No," Ginger admitted, "but I'm sure I can do it. I'm very responsible for my age."
"Aw, honey."
Evelyn let out a puff of air. Her eyes looked sad.
"I know you are. Here, let me show you how to hold the knife."
Her hand felt exactly as Ginger would have guessed, fleshy and soft. Glory's hand felt like a trap, the tiny wrist and delicate fingers making a fragile disguise for her steely grip. At home, Glory was making carrots too, but hers came bagged from the freezer, every one the same size. When Ginger asked her why she thought Evelyn preferred carrots that were gnarly with the top still on, Glory shrugged.
"Beats me. Drives 20 miles to get 'em that way, too. Imagine."
Back at the Clarks the next day, Ginger asked Evelyn why she drove so far for carrots.
"Oh, your mother loves to exaggerate," Evelyn told her. "I buy them right in town. You can tell your mother they have them up at the A&P.
Ginger did not tell her mother this, because Glory had made it clear in her own wordless way that she was not happy her daughter was helping a mother other than her own. The only stories Ginger dared bring home were about things that were unpleasant, usually things that hadn't happened, like how Evelyn used a room freshener that made her gag, when the truth was, Ginger loved the way the Clark house smelled, of oranges and warm cookies, even when nothing was baking. It was after the bad reports got an icy reaction that Ginger figured out she was supposed to quit. Evelyn was in the middle of demonstrating how to use a hand juicer when Ginger blurted it out.
"I can't be your mother's helper anymore. It makes my mom unhappy."
"Oh, sweetie, that has nothing to do with you. She's going through a rough patch.
Upset about Ivan. Upset there's no play. The theater group meant a lot to her."
Ginger smelled Mr. Diggins' cherry tobacco pipe wafting in from the next room.
He seemed to disappear into another room whenever she came over, but she could tell by the smell of his pipe he was there.
"Your mom needs a vacation," Evelyn confided. "That's all. I told her about a place, and she's considering it. I bet she's already feeling better. You'll see when you get home."
What Ginger saw when she got home was a fright of cookbooks open on the counter. Creative Cookery with Chicken of the Sea Tuna, and the I Hate to Cook book, open to the stained pages of Glory's favorite recipes.
"Your father's coming home on time for once," Glory announced when she saw her. "So I'm making a feast."
The centerpiece of the feast was Tuna Tempter, a casserole of tuna flakes, condensed mushroom soup, and wagon wheel pasta. Ginger watched her father eye the Pyrex dish with what looked like fear. She passed him the salt. That was the only way to get Tuna Tempter down. Douse it with salt, close your eyes, and swallow. He took the shaker, and Ginger relaxed. Then he put it down and pushed his plate away.
"I'll eat later," he patted his stomach. "We were so busy today, I lost track of time. Halfway through my corned beef, I saw it was 4:30. So this I'll have for my midnight snack."
"Eat, starve, I don't care."
With a lurch, Glory pushed her chair back and stood up.
"We have to go somewhere, Solly. If I have to look at these four walls all summer, I swear I'll..."
"Done,"
Solly smiled.
"I already had the same idea. The Neville-y. Connecting rooms."
Glory's eyes went dull. She could do that. Make the light in her eyes flick on or off as if there were a hidden switch.
"Place is a dump. What about where Evelyn and Casper go?"
Her eyes switched back on.
"The island I told you about. Martha's Vineyard, by Cape Cod."
"You want an island? Name one place the sand is whiter than Jones Beach."
This was one of their perennial arguments. Jones Beach, Solly's childhood stomping ground, versus Glory's Jersey Shore. He offered a white flag.
"You want the shore? We'll go to Long Branch."
"You know who Evelyn saw in Martha's Vineyard once? Lillian Hellman. Lillian Hellman has a house there. I bet you anything she's friends with Arthur Miller. Imagine if I bumped into Arthur Miller and he heard what happened with all my sons, how the play got canceled, how my career keeps going poof up in smoke. It could change my life, Solly, if we went to Martha's Vineyard."
Ginger silently urged her father to agree. Surely he could see this was a good idea, going somewhere her mother would be happy. She watched him play with his napkin, unfolding it, refolding it, pressing down hard to give the paper a sharp crease. He got up and threw the napkin away.
"Where else? A place we both agree."
Glory strummed her fingers.
"How about Portofino on the Italian Riviera?"
"Portofino pizza on Route 46, maybe. But for lunch, for dinner, it's too crowded."
Glory sat so still, Ginger wondered if she'd heard him. Mimi, who didn't notice that kind of thing, broke the silence.
"What about Holland?"
Solly looked at her.
"What do you know from Holland?"
"They have tulips."
Mimi turned to Ginger.
"Wasn't Holland before Portofino?"
Understanding slowly came, and Solly made his way to the dining room. The children trailed behind him. He stopped when he got to the Tower of Puzzles. Big Ben boxed on top of Portofino, Portofino on top of Holland.
"This is how you pick where you want to go? From a box?"
"Where I want to go is Martha's Vineyard."
Glory twirled her wedding band and then grabbed Solly's hands.
"There's a house Evelyn told me about. We can rent it for cheap. A darling house by a pond. Houses are a bargain. People are scooping them up. Everyone in Evelyn's family's getting one. Maybe we should get one."
"You smoking funny cigarettes now."
"Oh, never mind."
Glory sat down and scanned the annoying clouds in the sky above Lake Lugano.
"I'm looking for anything blue."
Ginger noted the sound of defeat. This was a rare win for her father. At least, she thought it was a win. But a few days later, when Glory pulled her into her bedroom, Ginger realized she'd gotten it wrong. The win was her mother's after all. Glory shut the door.
I did it. I rented the house on Martha's Vineyard. Just for a month. Don't look at me like that, Gingy. You don't know how difficult your father can be. He thinks he hates adventures. Anything new he doesn't want to try. So I have to ease him in. Once I ease him in, he'll come around. Pinky, swear you won't tell him about the house yet.
They linked pinkies. Glory pulled away hard.
Now here's the plan. Photographs of the house are coming in the mail. Once I get them, I'm going to put together a presentation so your father can see how beautiful everything's going to be. But if he gets the pictures before I do, if he gets to the mail first, it's over. He'll hate the idea for good, which is where you come in. You're going to intercept the mail and get it to me before your father sees it. Can you do it? Can I count on you?
Ginger nodded, and Glory's eyes turned bright. The photographs came on the worst day, a Saturday, when Solly was puttering around the house. But Ginger did her job well. She scooped up the mail from the floor in the front hall and managed to hide the hazardous envelope behind the living room drapes before her father passed through the room. Later, when he went to the bathroom, she retrieved the envelope and slipped it to her mother.
"Nicely done," Glory whispered. "A definite 10+.
She buried the evidence underneath a pile of papers on her kitchen desk. After that, it was a waiting game until Solly's favorite show came on. Then, envelope back in sleeve, Glory hustled Ginger to the pantry. In Ginger's opinion, the pantry was an awful choice for a secret meeting. For one thing, it was right beside the den, and for another, it had a thin vinyl accordion contraption of a door meant to be kept shut by magnets that had years ago lost their pull. Now, whenever anyone tried to close the door, it immediately retracted. If her father walked by, he could see right in. See them huddled close, staring at the snapshots of the house Glory rented behind his back? Something about this had gotten Glory so excited, she gave off heat, perfuming the small space with a mix of Albaline cleanser, Brett shampoo, and Je Reviens perfume. Queasy, Ginger sat down, accidentally dislodging her mother's journal from the shelf behind her. It fell into her lap, splayed open, and she averted her eyes. Glory's journal went up with her every night so she could write in it in peace before she went to bed. But during the day, it might pop up anywhere. By now, Ginger had seen enough of it to know its contents. Reviews of plays her mother hoped to star in, lists of cities she dreamed of visiting, and musings about her day. It was the last part, the musings, little glimpses inside her mother's mind, that made Ginger so uncomfortable her body would itch. Her policy now when she spotted the journal? Close it up, look away, move on fast. As Ginger set the journal on a high shelf, Glory ripped open the envelope. On the other side of the wall, her father was whistling to the theme song of All in the Family.
If she could hear him, why did Glory think he couldn't hear them?
Her mother passed her a photo of a spindly chair.
That's an antique, she explained.
Ginger nodded, noncommittal. Glory tapped the next picture, her fingernail polished to a new shade she called mauve.
Roses?
She brought the photograph to her nose and inhaled the imaginary scent of the pale pink flowers that spilled over a white picket fence.
Divine!
She let out gasps of muted delight as she shuffled through the rest.
Porthole windows, screened-in porch, California king.
Solly's program broke to commercial.
Where'd everybody go?
Glory stuffed the photographs back in the envelope, grabbed Ginger's arm, and whispered,
"You know where my jewelry box is."
Her mother kept her jewelry in a wooden puzzle box hidden in plain sight on her closet floor. But Ginger wasn't sure she was supposed to know this.
Closet?
Glory nodded and pressed the envelope into Ginger's hand.
Think you can figure out how to open the box?
another thing Ginger was not sure she should admit. The puzzle box was a gift from a toy manufacturer in Japan. There were 4 steps to opening it, and Mimi had timed it so Ginger knew she could open it in under a minute.
I can try. Good. Put the pictures in the bottom compartment. Hurry! Go!
She yanked open the accordion door.
I'm making Harvey wall bangers, she sang out to Solly. Be right there.
We got drinks, Solly said. We got an occasion I don't know about.
After the photographs were stashed in the puzzle box, it was easy to pretend the house on Martha's Vineyard did not exist. But that daydream ended one morning when Ginger came down to breakfast and found outside Glory in her favorite dress, a floral number that showed a peak of cleavage and emphasized her tiny waist.
Look how beautiful.
Glory opened her journal to show Solly photographs mounted with black corners on one page and on the other an advertisement of a beach cut out of a magazine.
What do we got here?
Solly asked. After Glory broke the news, she tried to soften the blow.
Just 1 month. Just July.
I'm supposed to go away for a month when I got shipments coming every day.
You won't stay a month,
Glory told him. She was smiling, but it wasn't real.
You'll come the first week, and after that you'll come weekends. With Paul Clark, that's what men do, Solly. They come weekends.
Her face looked serene, and for a moment Ginger was tricked into thinking she was happy. This time when Glory stood up, she rose so fast her chair toppled over. For a moment they all stared at it, the chair on its side on the floor, like some kind of kitchen roadkill.
If I don't get out of here, so help me God, I will—
No, Solly cut her off. We'll go. That's it. We're going.
And so it was decided. Chapter 6. They had just finished dinner. Richard was clearing the table, Ginger was loading the dishwasher, when the side door opened. After 3 nights at Angie's, Julia was back. No explanation, just a brief nod to her parents. What that meant, Ginger had no idea. And up she went, disappearing into her room. Had positive thinking actually worked? Ginger gave it another try.
Do you think this means the thing with Nick is over?
The answer came in the form of a sharp rap at the front door. Richard answered it. The boy walked in, grunted hello, and went up the stairs 2 at a time. Ginger heard Julia's squeal of delight and recalibrated. Was Julia home because Angie's mom finally realized she was being played? It didn't matter. They had a new problem now. Without discussion or permission, was this a permission situation? Nick set up semi-permanent residence in their house. Now, when Julia came home from school, Nick was with her. Every night at dinner, Nick sat down and joined them. And as if they were in some kind of reverse fairy tale, he stayed until just before the clock struck 12. Most nights, Ginger and Richard were in bed by 11, but Ginger wouldn't fall asleep until she heard the sound of the boy clomping down the stairs. He wasn't quiet. It wasn't as if he was sneaking out. But sometimes she had to strain to hear the door close over the sound of Richard snoring. It really was galling that Richard could drop off to sleep while the boy was still across the hall in Julia's room. Ever the adapter, Ginger made accommodations. Cooking for 4 was not that different from cooking for 3, and after she explained to Nick that they didn't wear shoes inside the house, a quirk of Richard's that she understood, he was pretty good at remembering to leave his disintegrating sneakers on the metal shoe tray near the door. The hardest part was watching Julia trail after him like a pet as he lumbered from their refrigerator to their basement to her bedroom. She'd made a brief attempt at declaring Julia's bedroom a no-Nick zone, but surrendered that point after Julia replied,
No problem. We'll hang out at Nick's instead.
This wasn't the solution Ginger had in mind, and it gave her pause. Why weren't they hanging out at Nick's? Nick gave her the answer.
We can go to my house now if you want, but my mom's home. It's going to smell.
He turned to Ginger. My mom smokes, and the smell makes Julia sick.
At least there was that to be grateful for. Julia didn't like the smell of cigarettes. And while she was being all positive thinking about it, she might as well also be grateful that so far Julia kept her bedroom door open, and so far there had been no appeals for the boy to spend the night. Those were her new lines in the sand, though the possibility of Julia crossing them hovered like a threat. To minimize her distress, Ginger tried to make the sight of Nick go blurry. She could do that if she concentrated. Turn the actual boy padding around her house into a vague, tall shadow. And Nick, it appeared, had figured out a way to do the same with her. Richard developed a different strategy for dealing with their unwelcome house guest. A combination of a things-could-be-worse attitude and a sudden spike in late nights at the office. Dinner went back to a threesome. Ginger reduced to an appendage. When the line in the sand was finally crossed, Julia closed her door with Nick inside her room. Richard wasn't home. This left Ginger standing her ground alone, in the hall, knocking hard on her daughter's door.
Jules, open the door. She knocked again. Sorry, Jules, but your door has to stay open.
She waited another moment.
I'm coming in.
She gave them one more warning.
I'm opening the door now.
She squinted, afraid of what she'd see. What she saw was this. Nick and Julia sitting on the floor, backs against the bed, headphones plugged into the computer on Nick's lap, sharing earbuds so that each had one ear connected to the headphones, and one ear that surely had heard her calling from the hall. Julia, oblivious to her presence, pointed to the screen. Nick laughed. Ginger squatted in front of them.
Why didn't you answer when I knocked?
She lifted the computer off Nick's lap. Julia jumped up and the headphones split in half.
God!
Door has to stay open. Understood?
It was Nick who answered.
Sure.
She waited an hour to check. This time the door was closed but not latched. A technicality, really, but by then she was too tired to start a new round of battle, so she let it be. When Richard came home, he was surprisingly unsympathetic.
What were they doing wrong? He asked. They were on the computer, right? How is that bad?
She chalked up his brusque tone to another bad day at work. That night, as she lay in bed waiting for Nick to go, his departure, she noticed, had now slid to 1 o'clock. Ginger decided this business of having the door shut but not latched was plain wrong. Same went for the new departure time. She made a list in her head of non-negotiable rules and turned to share it with Richard.
You awake?
His reply was a snore that sounded fake. Okay, it didn't matter. Her decision was made. She would handle this on her own. The next night at 8:30, Richard at work as usual. Ginger was in the living room catching up on back issues of the American Journal of Public Health when she heard movement above. Upstairs, her suspicions were confirmed. The door was shut but not latched. This time she entered without knocking.
Sorry.
Julia looked up.
What?
Sorry, but shut is the same as closed.
Julia shrugged and went back to what she was doing. Ginger surveyed the scene. They were sitting on the floor. Julia's computer was on Nick's lap. Nick had on a new set of headphones, probably because the other set broke. Julia was cutting up a bedsheet. Before Ginger could figure out why Julia would cut up a bedsheet, her attention was drawn back to Nick. He was fiddling with a helmet. The helmet had wings sprouting from the ears. Nick, she now noticed, was wearing something other than his usual torn shirt. He had on a jacket, military-looking, though what branch she couldn't place. The jacket was old, the material shiny with maroon epaulettes, and on one sleeve, just below the shoulder, a crest with a bar and stars.
She glanced over and saw Julia was wearing an identical jacket, though hers had a pin on the lapel. It was a letter S. Ginger took a moment